spending the work week at home upped our interest in comfy threads, pajama sets, sweatpants. We're discussing the year in loungewear and whether we'll ever go back to Preston proper. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. A consumer trend expert told Bloomberg recently to make way for the roaring 2020s. She predicts decorative clothing, high heels, and lots of makeup as a referendum on the drab sweatpants and loungewear that summed up our year. Did you buy new sweatpants or a house dress? Or are you a sweatpants hater? Why is that? Is it their bagginess? How is your elastic waistband holding up? Share your loungewear pandemic stories. We want to hear them. 800-642-1234. Marley Healy is an independent fashion historian and curator. Marley, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, good morning. Did you find yourself dressing down this year as you stayed inside in the pandemic?
Absolutely. a couple of reasons, one of which I moved to a much colder climate than I had been used to from the West Coast back to the East Coast. So long pants, certainly, and more cozy, warmer versions of them for sure. But yeah, you know, you don't have to go out and you're discouraged from going out. Not a whole lot of need to put on tight trousers.
Well, this trend toward loungewear has been, a long time coming. This has been quite the evolution. Can you take us back to the 1700s and Marie Antoinette, the last queen of France before the French Revolution? What did you see there in her that may inform what we're wearing today?
Sure. So I think everyone knows some version of the tragedy of the French court at the end of the 18th century. But there's one particular garment and an image of Marie Antoinette that people might not be ultra familiar with as far as her fashion, that was one item on a laundry list of why people kind of turned on her and disliked her so much. That would be the chemise la reine, or robe de gall, that was popularized by Marie Antoinette in the 1780s. And it was a very controversial outfit.
Can you describe it for us? What did it look like?
Basically, think of a very simple sort of muslin dress, kind of poofy, like piratey sleeves, with a sash around the waist, kind of white, lots of ruffles, but very free flowing. There's a very famous portrait by one of her good friends, an artist, Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun. She painted of the queen in 1783 wearing this dress, and the public was outraged when it appeared in salons and people started to view it because it looked like the queen was wearing underwear and the style was not befitting of a queen. The court dress that she was expected to wear was much more opulent and formal than this gauzy, free-flowing, simple muslin gown. And the idea behind this dress for Marie Antoinette was she wanted to have a sort of step away from that very, very formal court dress that she was expected to wear every day, you know, as the royal monarch. And effectively, the idea of the garment that she's wearing, this chemise la reine, it's usurping a garment, an idea from the lower classes that's fiercely oppositional to what was expected of the French court. And that's just, you know, a tiny glimpse into the perceived issues around this particular dress. There's loads more to unpack, but the sort of relevant issue for loungewear is that it does really signify a very casual approach to dress for personal comfort in the face of formality and professionalism, your profession being you're the Queen of France.
Yeah, right. I want to reintroduce you here. Marley Healy is a fashion historian and curator, and she's explaining the evolution of loungewear and what happened as we move toward the pandemic era, how we're living today. You can join in. What can we learn about the history of leisure wear to see where sweatpants are going as a fashion trend? Have you found yourself wearing sweats more than pre-pandemic times? Join in at 800-642-1234. Marley, As a parallel here, for men in the 18th century, what was happening with men in fashion?
Well, a lot of menswear, especially just during during the daytime, it is very formal, tight-fitting breeches, breech-length pants. And at the very end of the 18th century, you kind of start seeing long pants, but tailored jackets. But something very interesting is that a lot of garments that were appropriated from the East, I mean, over the last 400 plus years, but in the 18th century, those were adapted into casual wear for Westerners. So for example, men wore something called a banyan, the wealthier men. And these banyans were long, full, open robes, usually made of brocade or silk, and they were cut like Japanese kimonos in the 17th and 18th centuries. Mm. And banyans were basically a precursor to the bathrobe. So these were leisure garments that wealthier men would wear in the comfort and sort of intimacy of their homes. And eventually you start seeing women adopting banyans, calling them morning robes, to wear at home either when they're getting dressed for the day, first thing in the morning, or in the evening before retiring to bed.
Were they a status symbol?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as with, you know, a lot of fashion garments around the time, the materials certainly were very luxurious. They were all imported. And that's, you know, kind of part of the status around them. They were very costly. And if you were wealthy enough to afford the luxury of having leisure time, you could certainly afford to have a bathrobe and lounge about your house. And there was certainly some status associated with that. And the fun fact about the banyans, there's a lot of portraits of men in the 18th century wearing these very flowy open robes, you know, with little sort of urban style hats. And it's supposed to sort of imply what great thinkers and how much time they're able to devote to intellectualism. Makes you pretty smart.
Where could you not wear the banyan?
Well, at first, it would have been a very intimate garment. You wouldn't necessarily, you know, wear that to receive visitors unless they were intimate friends, and you would have worn it in the comfort and sort of privacy of your home. Although I want to say, you know, in the colonies in the so in America, as, you know, things are being imported over, and then, you know, in the 1800s in the U.S., in certain areas, I want to say like in Virginia, more in the South, because of the heat, you do start seeing kind of this loosening up of men's coats. And mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, a couple examples of men wearing banyans out in public. And that style of robe becomes more popular with the kind of academic set and, you know, those professorial robes that they wear at university.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, too, how climate has an influence on that, on the banyan and what people are wearing as well. We have fashion curator Marley Healy with us, and she's giving us perspective on loungewear, past, present, future. What do you want to know about the history of leisure wear and the role, particularly, that sweatpants are playing in this apparel category? Do you hope that sweats go away once the pandemic is over? Does comfort signify our attitude about the world? What does our desire for leisure wear tell us about our society? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Marley Healy right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're bidding adieu to 2020 with a fitting conversation about leisure wear. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A vaccine rollout gives hope that we will eventually return to our workplaces, but will office wear mean polished outfits? What will the return of casual Fridays look like? The corporate memos on casual Fridays could be interesting. What was your favorite attire this year? Are you ready to ball up your sweatpants and throw them into the back of your closet? Or are they pandemic tested and ready for what comes next? It's 800-642-1234. You can join in. We have fashion curator Marley Healy, who is our guide. So let's move into the 19th century, if you will. And there is the rational dress movement, mainly involved middle-class feminists. What is the significance of this era in fashion and loungewear?
I mean, that's a lot. Loungewear, it disrupts the conventions of propriety. And there's always been public outcry at the sort of casualizing of fashion, and eventually most people get over it. I think about the evolution of the bathing suit, for instance. The first bathing costumes were modest in the extreme by Western standards today, but people were still scandalized by the audacity of women wearing things like bloomers, and then eventually going bare-legged at the beach or the seaside. And beach pajamas for women in the 1920s were adapted from men's sleepwear. So these daring, fashionable women would wear long, flowy-legged trousers for outdoor lounging, which were shocking since those were trousers and they crossed to gender lines. Anything that gave women increased movability, in this case, less restrictive clothing for beachside lounging, was disruptive of the status quo, as well as anything that challenges established class or gender structures. I mean, that's bound to shake things up. So the rational dress movement of the 19th century, an immediate precursor to this, is a really good example of a radical upheaval in women's dress, because dress reformers, mostly women, mobilized against restrictive clothing like large skirts and corsets that impeded their ability to participate actively in the popularity of the safety bicycle, which was just manufactured in the 1880s. And this is when the controversy around bloomers began, basically pants with gathered ankles. So a very early precursor to the shape of a sweatpant. And the bloomer costume still had women wearing a dress over the pant part. But the fact that the dress was slightly shorter and that women were effectively wearing pants, and they now had the ability to physically transport themselves on a bicycle almost anywhere, it really shook the status quo.
Yeah, because they had mobility. They could get around now because the fashion allowed them to do that. Certainly, if they had pockets too, that, you know, men who had pockets also had a certain advantage over women who, you know, didn't have any place to put anything.
Sure.
When you look at the 1920s in France, sweatpants first emerged there. What did you see?
Sweatpants, they were developed for athletes in the 1920s, as you say, in France, as a purely functional garment to literally absorb sweat. They were exclusively athletic wear for athletes until around the 1970s. and they were purely utilitarian garments, like I said, for absorbing the sweat. But the boom in physical fitness of the 1980s, particularly in the United States, really helped to foster a desire for more fashion-forward versions than the simple gray that had been used for decades. Mm-hmm. People at large sort of admire athletes, and the obsession with health and an athletic-looking body, that definitely comes into prevalence, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. So definitely the Olympics, as those are being, you know, televised, that certainly would have helped popularize that image. But you don't really see mainstream fashion of wearing athletic wear, not to the gym, until around the 1980s here.
Okay, so it is well into the 80s before you see the sweatpants becoming more universal outside of working out?
Yes.
We're talking with Marley Healy, who is a fashion historian and curator, and she's taking us on a tour of loungewear. And the current embrace of comfortable clothing amid the pandemic. You can join in. What have you been wearing during these months? Do you fully intend on wearing your athleisure to work if and when you go back into an office? Or are you already back at work and are currently doing just that? Join in at 800-642-1234. Marley, style leaders have said that sweatpants signify you've given up, you've given in. Why do they carry the stigma?
I think there's a lingering sort of perception that wearing sweatpants, in a public or a social setting, not the gym or running down the street, is somehow indicative of an attitude that maybe you don't care about your appearance or that it's somehow disrespectful or inappropriate. And I guess a lot of people, they probably immediately imagine baggy, elasticized gray sweatpants when they think of sweats, but that's really just not the case anymore, considering the types of, really luxe fabrics and materials that are being used for things like sweatpants and joggers and leggings. And it's not just the same shape. It's not a baggy sweatpant. It's, a jogger where it's a little bit loose, but cuffed at the ankle, or a tight legging to give you a little shape. People are prioritizing their comfort while still managing to be in style, considering how prevalent athleisure wear has become.
It's more tailored.
Yeah, it absolutely can be. I think about, the athleisure items that I wear and, sweatpants. I have what I would consider to be more of a jogger style, with that gathered ankle, but it's still loose. It gives me range of motion, as opposed to being so baggy that I feel like I'm swimming in something. Garments that were designed for athletic activities or practical, labor endeavors, those have historically adapted into loungewear because the items tend to be made of less luxurious materials than formal or fancy dress, and they're constructed less rigidly for ease of movement. And who doesn't want to be comfortable and feel that sort of sense of freedom, especially if you're in your own home?
Well, certainly too, if you change out of your work clothes at the end of the day, you're in a pre-pandemic world, you would be changing into something more comfortable. And certainly sweatpants would be, probably in that dress of what you'd be changing into. Let's take a call on this now. Aaron is joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Aaron.
Yes, hello. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my call and having such a very interesting, lighthearted, and just generally enjoyable conversation this morning.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
So my basic comment is the fact that the impact of hip-hop and or urban and or rap culture on the United States of America as a whole for the past 40 years is undeniable. We all know the fashion trends that come about from these modern music industry icons. I'd like to highlight the fact that it was the birth of the rap culture back in the early 80s with the B-boys and B-girls and break dancers and rappers who were wearing the Puma suits and the Adidas suits and the hats and the Kangos. And it was their urban style that came up in the late 70s, early 80s that elevated the tracksuit or loungewear or leisure wear to a mainstream accepted and recognized form of fashion. And if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have seen the carte blanche acceptance of loungewear into our society today.
Aaron, thank you for that. Marley, what do you make of Aaron's tracing there of that history?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in total agreement. So Run DMC in particular helped to popularize the Adidas tracksuit, in the 80s. And then just thinking of a couple of examples, like the Beastie Boys in the 90s, more tracksuits. So I think a lot of people... conversations and like articles around sweatpants and loungewear have kind of come up recently, people keep mentioning Juicy Couture. Was that the beginning of the tracksuit, in the early 2000s? And it definitely wasn't. You see a lot of hip hop icons, B-boys and folks like that, wearing, you know, track suits as early as, you know, the 1980s. But what make the juicy track suit, the one that we all kind of know as a moment in fashion history, those come out around 2001 and immediately become emblematic of the sort of privileged, jet-setting, but very casual celebrity lifestyle. And the tracksuits that they made were very different than the ones popularized by folks like Run DMC in the 80s, which were already a thing. But what Juicy did was make a very tailored, feminine version in, you know, velour in pastel colors. So same, but different in a way.
Well, Marley, thank you for taking us through this history. Thanks for joining us.
Of course, my pleasure.
Marley Healy is a fashion historian and curator, and we reached her in Boston. Coming up, it is the Wall Street Journal's fashion editor who gives us her take on pajama sets that were the comfort food of the pandemic and why she's ready to give them the boot. How do you dress for your Zoom meetings, by the way? Do you remember what an iron is? Join in on your take on loungewear, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're giving the year in loungewear and sweatpants a proper roasting here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we've learned, athleisure had a good start in our wardrobes long before the pandemic set in. I bike to work to broadcast in the studio away from my kids. And during the pandemic, I just, you know, stopped changing out of my bike clothes, just stopped. So once I unpeel layers of outerwear, my pandemic uniform is bike leggings and a Terry bike jersey. I have one for each day of the week. This too shall pass. What is your pandemic uniform like? Will you have to change how you dress again once the pandemic is over? How might you feel? It's 800-642-1234. Rory Satran is fashion director at the Wall Street Journal, where she oversees men's and women's fashion and beauty. Rory, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I had to laugh because the last time you joined us, it was about how going gray was so, you know, on trend. And little did we know that there would be all this COVID gray and loungewear.
I'm the fashion director who's always convincing you not to put on any fashion or do anything with your hair and makeup. So I don't know if that's a success or a failure of my job.
So what do you make of all the sweatpants that you saw this year?
I mean, I think we've gone through peaks and valleys. It's been a real journey in the past 10 months in our kind of relationship to sweatpants. Pretty early on, myself and another fashion editor at the Wall Street Journal did a kind of debate about whether we should bother getting dressed at all. And I took the no side. I think the beginning of that article went something like, I'm confined in a small space with a four-year-old who often wears nothing but the wrong day of the week underwear. So no, I don't need to dress up these days. I'm still pretty much team sweatpants. You know, I think we're all juggling a lot, and I'm not particularly motivated to button up a pencil skirt and a silk blouse just to kind of, you know, just to work at my home office. I think one of the things that's really gone by the wayside is dry cleaning as well. So on the rare occasions that I have put on a dress or kind of a particularly nice Zoom top, I'm kind of like, now what do I do with this? Because I'm certainly not going to take it to the dry cleaner.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, when you look there at the industry areas that are hurting, you know, clothing sales fell 79% in the U.S., the largest dive on record. Sweatpants sales were up 80%. What do you see happening in the industry?
I mean, the list of retail bankruptcies this year is pretty alarming. If you look at American stalwarts like J. Crew, like Brooks Brothers, Neiman Marcus, and Taylor, all of these companies that most of us have really grown up with and depended on for a lot of our wardrobes, and particularly our work wardrobes, you know, I think that's a real sign of what we're headed into. And then, you know, the real winners, I think, are direct-to-consumer companies that are being really nimble and looking at the landscape and seeing what people want to wear, which at this point is, yes, super casual. I spoke pretty early on during the pandemic to Scott Sternberg, who's the founder of the Los Angeles brand Entire World. Scott had actually had another brand called Band of Outsiders, which did not make loungewear. That was also based out of Los Angeles. This is in the early 2000s, but it was very structured tailoring. He had a quite famous garment in the kind of mid-2000s, which was a bandage skirt for women that was made out of stretchy suspenders.
What?
So quite quite structured, nothing to do with the loungewear we're seeing. And Scott has totally pivoted into the athleisure world. And he was doing this before the pandemic, but I think really ramped it up when he saw that there was this demand. And he can't keep his kind of designer sweatpants in stock anymore. The Entire World sweatpants are these kind of cult items. They're a little more high end than, you know, a Champion sweat or something. I think a sweatshirt is, you know, between $75 and $90, and the sweatpants are similar. But, you know, I'm all for that kind of, you know, one level up, just to kind of make you feel a little more put together, a little bit more happy with what you're wearing. And he said, when I spoke with him, it's its own art making this lounge vibe chic. So I think that, you know, he being in Los Angeles is really for kind of the sweatpants lifestyle, where you make it look cool and you make it look good. And it's not necessarily about giving up.
Well, you mentioned athleisure. I mean, even Peloton, that huge giant exercise bike company that's all the rage, is getting into the fashion space. What can you explain what's going on there?
Peloton is making a huge move for apparel, much in the same way that like a SoulCycle did. And I think it's a great year for Peloton to be leaning into their apparel game, because there's no reason to ever change out of it. So I reported on this a few months ago, and I spoke to a lot of women who were, you know, totally obsessed with their Pelotons, as a lot of you probably are. And they order, you know, the sports bras and the leggings and the sweatshirts, and they wear them all day. So they, whatever you're doing these days, you know, it's not very much, but if you're going to get coffee or if you're going on a walk with a friend, you can still wear your Peloton gear. And it's a way of this, you know, it's a way to make it a real lifestyle brand in the true sense of the word. But the Peloton gear is also highly coveted, and people traffic it on Facebook groups. So if they buy the wrong size, then they resell it on Facebook for kind of maybe three times the price.
Wow.
It's the whole thing.
Wow. Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Rory Saturin, who is fashion director at the Wall Street Journal. She's giving her take on loungewear in the pandemic, where it's headed from here. What do you think? What are you wearing? Do you need to wear more formal clothes to get your day started in a productive way? Do you hope that sweatpants go away once the pandemic is over? Does comfort signify our attitude about the world? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Rory, the fashion industry as a whole was already hurting pre-pandemic, and certainly the internet, which sped up demand for new fashion, giving it more of a fast fashion disposable push. How have you seen the industry flexing to stay alive as people opt for these comfier clothes? Are brands shifting their cuts and their fabrics and what they design?
They sure are. I mean, the big thing I've noticed is the way that retailers are merchandising their apparel online. A lot of them have started a loungewear section of their website, or at home, I've seen as well, or kind of a mini line, which is all about things to wear at home. So they're just kind of organizing their clothing in a different way to kind of bring you to the things that you might be wearing, which is probably a soft pant and a nice cozy cardigan. In terms of design, you know, I've heard that designers, particularly who make suiting, are going to start integrating loungewear elements into their suiting. So whether that's an elastic waist for a men's dress pant, or whether that's, you know, a zipper somewhere, or vents, or these kind of comfortable elements that we've gotten used to. I haven't seen any great examples of that. And I have to say, I'm not a big proponent of that. I kind of feel like you have these two sections of fashion. You have your lovely cozy homeware, and then you have beautiful kind of Savile Row style suiting. I don't think they belong anywhere near each other.
I'm thinking like elastic suits or elastic waist for suits. I mean, have you seen toddler suits before? It reminds me of what toddlers wear.
It just seems like go for one or the other. It's right. Not a high-end garment, you know.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, even before the pandemic, we saw people embracing more comfortable clothing at work and out of work. Do you see offices changing at, you know, once more people are back in the office?
Absolutely. You know, we did a story about the new hybrid work from home lifestyle and how to dress for it. I think already what we've seen is if you're not 100% work from home, you're probably doing some kind of combination. So you're doing maybe a couple of hours at home on Zoom calls, and you might be going into the office a few times a week. I've heard of people in Los Angeles and kind of warmer climates doing outdoor meetings, a lot of walking meetings. Some people are biking into the office, but just one day a week. So we're all adopting these really strange kind of mixed up work lifestyles, which will require entirely different wardrobes. We're not going to be wearing, you know, fancy dressed up looks all day, every day. So I think we're going to be looking for things that go from one to the other. And particularly if you're a parent, there's this whole other layer on top of that, right? I know for myself, I'll have to go from school drop off, maybe to a Zoom call, maybe to a quick meeting with a colleague, and then back home to do some work. So you can't really wear a sweatsuit for all of that. I mean, perhaps, but I wouldn't recommend it. I think there's the other notion that people are wondering how to get ahead in this new work climate. How do I make the next step in my career? Because it's not about just maintaining anymore. It's about perhaps getting that promotion you've hoped for or getting the next job. And I think if you show up in every Zoom call, really in a sweatsuit with your hair unwashed, that starts to kind of add up in the eyes of others.
Works against the image. Yeah, let's pause there with the Wall Street Journal's fashion director, Rory Satran, our guide to the year in loungewear, reflections on the unraveling workplace dress code, with your take, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's Loungewear on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with the Wall Street Journal's Rory Satran. It's not just sweatpants that had a big year. According to the fashion platform List, searches for the iconic Birkenstock shoes saw a 225% spike in searches in the second quarter. So will the Birkenstocks go to work after the pandemic and economy recovers? What will happen to the clothing industry? Will we refresh our wardrobes? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. So Rory, the Birkenstock, a shoe built for comfort, what do you see there?
Okay. Well, Birkenstocks have been on the rise in the fashion sense for at least a decade now. They've adopted a really clever strategy where they do micro collaborations with high-end designers. So my big early pandemic purchase was a pair of Proenza Schooler Birkenstocks. So your classic Birkenstock sandals, but with a little bit of a kind of designer twist, some white stitching. And gosh, I wore those every day in March with a pair of kind of rag socks. It was like my nod to fashion while I was still home. I mean, it's hard to quibble with comfort, right? They feel good.
Oh, what happens to the high heels that are gathering dust under work desks?
It's a great question. Jason Gay, our humorist at the paper, wrote a really funny letter to his dress shoes early on in the pandemic that we published in the paper. I think that, you know, none of us are very eager to return to feeling pinched all day long. This weekend, we have a story in the paper about the history of clogs, because clogs have suddenly become an element in fashion, with people realizing how comfortable and easy it is to kind of slip on a shoe. And our men's fashion editor, Jacob Gallagher, wrote a story about men's house shoes a few months ago that went totally viral when he asked readers on Instagram, "So what house shoes do you wear?" And he got dozens and dozens of answers from housebound guys that were so excited to send in photos of their house shoes. I think that people develop kind of an almost like friendly relationship with the clothing and the shoes that kind of get them through the day. So men had like named their house shoes and were like so into their choice. So some were really into those Merrells. Some had those kind of puffy down shoes from North Face. There were definitely some Birkenstocks in there, some UGG slippers. People become really passionate about their choice of house shoes because they feel good. And we're not particularly used to wearing shoes that feel that good.
Well, you say house shoes. What happened with house dresses and nap dresses? What's going on there?
Oh my gosh. One of the big winners of the pandemic is the viral nap dress. So Nellie Diamond, who is the founder of Hill House Home, which was originally a New York-based direct-to-consumer homeware and sheet brand, they started doing what she calls a nap dress. So it's sort of a half nightgown, but half sort of house dress that you can definitely wear outside, sometime in 2019. And they had success with it right away. But then when the pandemic hit, this nap dress just went insanely viral. You could not avoid it. It was everywhere on Instagram. Every influencer was wearing it. It became a real trend among mommy influencers or women kind of posting pictures of themselves in this kind of lovely nature garden setting with three perfect little children running around. I think women loved the idea of wearing something that was super comfortable as a nightgown, but also was presentable and kind of romantic. And again, didn't feel like just giving up and wearing your old holy sweatpants.
Yeah, and certainly very forgiving, flowy. You don't have to suck in or anything like that.
Yeah. And we also did a story fairly early on in the pandemic about the return of the house dress. And there was incredible search engine optimization on this one because everyone was searching for house dress. And I had a little moment while editing the story where I thought, house dress. I love Lucy. Like, are we encouraging women to kind of snap on these 50s style housewife dresses? There was something a little bit of a turn off to me. But then we spoke to women, and this was like high power litigators and women who own their own businesses who were taking calls and working at home. But they just said, you know what? It's comfortable, so I'm wearing it.
Yeah, go for it. We're talking, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Rory Saturin, who is fashion director at the Wall Street Journal. She's explaining the rise of pandemic-era loungewear and what it might mean for fashion going forward, and taking your insights on loungewear, pajama sets, what you've been wearing this year. 800-642-1234. You know, consumer trend experts say that once the pandemic is over, people are going to be refreshing their wardrobes. They're going to be buying things. And I'm like, yeah, but what? I mean, do we have any sense on what will happen when people do decide to refresh their wardrobes?
That's a great question. I'm hearing from a lot of women that they're becoming a lot more thoughtful, a lot more personal in their choices. So if they've always loved soft beige leather, maybe buying a small piece in that fabric, or if they've always been really into silk, maybe purchasing things like that. So being less trend driven and a little bit more personal in their choices. You know, I mean, I think another big winner of this pandemic in the fashion world that we haven't brought up is the Zoom shirt. Has been kind of a staple for a lot of us that do virtual work. And you asked earlier on whether clothing brands had been kind of changing their design elements. And I think that this is definitely one place where you can now find, particularly for women, a lot of shirts that have details from kind of the waist up. So whether that's a kind of fabulous collar or a fabulous sleeve. And I think that that will continue. I think women are a little bit more conscious of what they're wearing from the waist up, maybe less conscious of, as we said, our shoes and our footwear, and kind of dressing for Zoom.
Well, let's take a call now. Tyrone is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Tyrone. What are you wearing this year?
Good morning. Well, it's not so much about me, but good morning, ladies, and best wishes for the new year. I kind of want to tailcoat on what Aaron had said earlier about the sweatsuits and stuff there and the sportswear. But I see a lot of the ladies out in classy stuff, like the biker stuff in the summertime and some of the stretch spandex see-through stuff there, which is, you know, worn classy with some women, but then not so classy with other women because, you know, it's kind of see-through. Then some women don't have anything. Or they've got a thong
too sheer,
on it.
Right, too sheer. So what do you think, Tyrone, about pajamas in public?
Up or down? That's where I was going next. Yeah, I've been to gas stations, I've been in stores, and I'm not so much with that there, especially if you're, you know, out in the store there and you've, you know, got your pajamas on and you haven't introduced yourself to soap and water in the morning. I don't want to have you in my shopping cart.
Oh, dear. Well, Tyrone, thank you for calling in. And Rory, maybe we should end it there on pajamas and when and where we should wear them, if we can wear them out in the wide world.
You know, there are a lot of brands that are making such fun pajamas that it would be such a shame to only confine them to your house. There's one brand in particular that I love called The Sleeper. They're direct-to-consumer, only available online, and they make the most fabulous pajamas that have ostrich feathers along the legs. So I see a lot of women wearing those ostrich-trimmed pajamas just anywhere. And actually, it's New Year's Eve. They would be so perfect for a New Year's Eve Zoom.
Oh, Rory, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rory Saturin is fashion director at the Wall Street Journal. And earlier we talked with fashion curator Marley Healy. This is The Morning Show. Get out your sweats. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.